Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. Just a quick note before we jump into the interview. During the actual recording of the interview, there were a lot of thunderstorms in the area. And because of this, the Wi-Fi was spotty at best. So there are only certain excerpts included in this audio, not the entire interview. Sorry about that. But yeah, let's jump right into it.
Today's guest is Mr. Gary Boren, freelance composer, producer, and musician with Gary Boren Music. Thank you for taking time out of your day for this interview. I really appreciate it.
But yes, I'm happy to be here with you today.
So your career seems to be a pretty unique one. Certainly it strays from like the traditional medicine, law, business, or finance like careers. So how did you get interested in music? And many people like in high school have interests in playing music or listening to music, but what made you believe that this is the career that you want to pursue and that this is the right thing for you?
It was always something that in crowds of people, well, at school or at church or something like that, that they would do music, I would find that I could easily understand the music and that I could easily sing a harmony to it or subdivide it or something like that. And so it was just interesting at that point. And I just heard it a lot. You know, there was records around the house, literally Elvis Presley records or Andy Williams records, Percy Faith strings and all this, of course, Sinatra and all that stuff. And then the Beatles just drove me crazy. So I was drumming on the back of my parents' car seat. And when I teach some now, I teach guitar, piano, bass, how to sing, how to write music, of course. Yeah, so I was on the back of their car drumming a lot. And then we would drive by these pawn shops. I never went in a pawn shop, I don't think, until I was in my 30s. But we drove by it. We would go, I'm not religious, by the way, and I used to be. But I was raised religious. So I, when I look back at my childhood, some of it, so much of it comes through that lens, I guess. But at any rate, it does go way back. And several times, I remember I was in a element. Of course, I must have been in fifth grade, and my sister was in the high school musical. And so they were looking. It was The King and I. So they were looking for little kids to be the kids in from Siam or something like that. And so at this big ballet studio over near SMU, hundreds of kids showed up. But it was really, really, really full. Everybody was sitting down. I was like, oh, God, this is weird. And everybody, and they went around the room one by one and made all these kids sing. And so I was like, I didn't know if I wanted to be there at all. This was very awkward and icky. And everybody was having to listen to each other and judge each other. And so by the time they got to me, I was white and I was sick. But I sang and it worked out fine. It worked out fine, but in a way it weirded me out even more because they started laughing. It was very hard for me to understand, but I knew what they were telling me is I had overthought it and I was worried too much that I wouldn't be good enough, and I was good enough. And so that was it. And so the other thing that led me to believe is they don't know anything. And so I'm hard on myself. And that's maybe something that's good. If you're going to be a musician and you're going to be concerned with tuning and rhythm, then you really, really, really can't fake it for long, you know, you find bullies in every profession, right? But in music, it is like, in fact, I had a St. Mark's friend who was a roommate of mine after high school, a little bit, John Hammock, a wonderful guy. And one thing that John told me in high school, we were both in track a little bit. He was so serious. And I was a little bit serious. And he was like, well, track is the best sport because you compete with yourself. It's only you against your best strength, your time, or something like that. Okay, maybe not totally true, but I don't know. It did mean a lot to me. And so I found something in music to where I really didn't have to get in the ring and fight with somebody. I didn't have to, if somebody was super, super smart and a bully, or super, super funny and making fun of you, or whatever they were, I could get into my own world and then I could grade myself. And I was very hard on myself, but still, at least I said, well, okay, at least I won't go out in public.
Were there any people that influenced your decision to become a musician? And in college, did you consider any other majors, or did you just at the beginning know that music was the thing for you?
No, that's a great question. And I really do wish I would have had some backup. Although I guess if I had some serious backup, I wouldn't have gone ahead with the plan A. When I came to St. Mark's, I was just there for 3 years, and they let me in for the music. And that's really what they wanted from me. And I did. I sang in the choir. And so Jim Livengood, you didn't know him, but Jim Livengood was a great influence on me. And as were other people, they were very friendly. But still, they didn't understand me. But somehow or other, they seemed to have a place for me. But gosh, St. Mark's was different, so different for me. Other people. So that was the thing about also St. Mark's, where they wanted you there. Anybody, if you do music, they expect you to perform. And so that's a strange thing. And so that's been an issue with me. And the funny thing is, yesterday I got in the car looking around and I said, oh God, I want to play someplace. So I drove out. I couldn't, then I didn't have the courage to go up this manager. So I went over to another club over here, Urban in Richardson, Inner Urban. And I went up, talked to them. I said, and so they said, well, yeah, come back. So I'm going to go over there this afternoon. I set up a gig last night. So this afternoon at 5 to 7, I'm going over there. I'm going to play a 2-hour set of music with my acoustic guitar and singing. Wherever I sing from the past, 50s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, although I do Khalid, and I'm not going to do any Taylor Swift, although I've played in clubs and I've learned Taylor Swift songs and stuff like that. And also I teach, right? So Olivia Rodrigo or something like that. So there's so much to learn from the new music. But all what I'm saying is all of that is the influence.
Was there anything else that you considered in high school or college? Or was this just the right thing for you from the start?
I don't know. It's so funny because it is really different. And the more I live life, the more I enjoy kind of going out of the lanes and seeing what's up. But when I got to college, the funny thing was, directly because of the St. Mark's, when I got into USC, University of Southern California, the fall of 1973, I don't think I enrolled in any music classes, maybe a film music class. It turned out to be taught by David Raxon, who was a famous composer I didn't know at the time. But that was maybe a couple years later. So I went to USC. I started doing very, very well in everything. I was the English and psychology and stuff like that. I really didn't take sciences, though, and I didn't take math. I took French, did well in that. But all these things, I had been an average student at best at St. Mark's. I got to college USC. I was pretty much an A student if I wanted to be. It was strange. And I thought, okay. And I joined a fraternity and I was like, okay, I guess I am going to be a lawyer. And so, because that's what all those other guys were going to be. And I did think about that a lot and I enjoyed it. And then I enrolled in a recording class at USC. And that happened to be in Hollywood. You would meet once a week. And we would go there, the 10 of us or something. And when we would meet in this recording class, pretty quickly, they would start giving me a guitar or pushing me out to the studio to be the guinea pig in front of the mic. So I didn't learn as much behind the scenes. On the other hand, it felt good for them to think that really nobody can do this better than I can. And of course, there are many people, but they didn't have to be in that room. So it was a confidence builder. So so that's kind of the same thing though, isn't it? But I did get involved in recording music. Then about a year and a half later, I went to a studio on Sunset Boulevard, 6000 Sunset, United Western Recording Studios, it was called back in the day. Nowadays, it's been called Ocean Way and East West Studios and whatever. It's a very, very famous recording studio, been called several things. But yeah, I worked for free in between my sophomore and my junior year at UC, University of Southern California. I started taking I hadn't taken any music courses at USC then. But over that summer, I worked at the recording studio for free. I mean, and it was a mind blow. I was setting up the chairs and studios for 50 people to come in and record. All the headphones had to be right, the microphones in this other room. Few of the guys from the Beach Boys, even though the Beach Boys had quit by that time, the Beach Boys would generally, one or two of them or three of them would show up and they'd be in Studio 3. Mike Post was doing stuff there. I worked with Quincy Jones. I worked with Barry White. I worked with Barbara Streisand. I worked with Neil Diamond. I worked with Captain Tennille. Joe Cocker nearly knocked me over when he opened up a door with a bottle of Old English 800 in one hand, which is alcohol, and the other hand was Jack Daniels. And so I worked at that studio, started out that assistant engineering and setup, you know, or getting people coffee and stuff like that. And then when school came back around for me to go to my third year at USC, I said, okay, thank you. I'm going back to school now, because I'd done it for free anyway, for two, kind of like an apprenticeship, or because I could not like fix a tape machine or anything. Although I could climb up on a chair and have all these microphones in my hand and put them over violin players' heads. And these violin players would have these crazy expensive violins and they'd look at me and because I was dangling over the, it was a fun experience, and it worked for me. It worked. I didn't mind the pressure at all. Late nights, early nights, whatever it was. And then I started a very, very serious guitar study at that time because I was working in the recording studio. I went back to college that fall. That's true. And then I switched everything to music. And that was a total mind blow because I had never really studied music. I had a good ear and I could imitate and stuff like that, but I had not played trumpet. I played viola for like a half semester when I was in the second grade, and that was it. And you know, I could beat on the back of my parents' car. The drums, not bad. But so for some reason or another, I changed my major to music, and everybody else was a music major. They had played piano and trumpet and violin and orchestra since age, boom, early age, right? So it was really bizarre. At the same time, every single afternoon, I would go back to the recording studio, start at 2 o'clock now, because they said, well, if you're going to go back to school, well, then we'll pay you so you can stay at the studio. So they started paying me at the studio, and I went back to school full-time studying music. So it really was a killer semester. And I quit school at the end of that semester, got through that semester and then quit because the recording studio was like, what can I say? You're working with Frank Sinatra and Barbara Streisand, these kind of people. Plus I was still writing. Every guitar player who was famous was coming through that studio. So it was just an amazing experience. Yeah. So that was the studio period. And then after that, for about 3.5 years. And then after that, I decided I wanted to go back to college and get a degree in music composition. I was learning everything. And everybody said, you're crazy for leasing the studio. Because I was working with these certain people. I wasn't writing songs for them. I wasn't playing the guitar or piano. I was recording them. Yes, that goes into producing, blah, blah, blah. And yes, there's several wonderful stories where Neil Diamond was singing and I corrected him and rolled back the tape machine, and the producer looked at me and got really, really mad. I said, whoa, what's wrong? What's wrong? He said, why did you go back? Why'd you rewind? I said, because he was out of tune. He wasn't out of tune. I said, okay, he was a little bit. And he said, where was he out of tune? And I said, don't. When he said, you don't send me flat. And at the same time I said that, the producer was getting ready to come up in his chair and hit me. Now, that I'm exaggerating, right? But I'm saying it, so nothing is going to be true. You got to check this out. So about the same time that the producer was arguing with me and mad at me, because I stopped the tape machine. True enough, Neil Diamond's singing, and it's me and three other guys in the room. Or Neil's in the other room, and there's two of them guys in the room I won't name. And so, but anyway, as soon as that happened, the altercation happened, Neil, and he has a pretty big voice. I don't know if you've heard Neil Diamond, but Neil Diamond just said, yeah, Gary's right. Let's go back. And so we went back and punched it in. And about 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, we were walking at the hall. At any rate, Neil Diamond offered me gum out in the hall. And he said, thank you. And he gave me a nod. So that was a tremendous vote of confidence. And of course, in the studio with Captain Neil and any of those people up, you're very, very close. And you work with them time and time again. If you're good enough to hang out with them and not make a horrible mistake. So I do love what I do. I wanted to go back to school, though. I wanted to go back to school and study composition. So I went out to the Pepperdine, Malibu, and I studied guitar all the time, studied piano all the time. I got involved in their musical department and everything. Still never played trumpet or violin or anything like that. Actually, I took a semester of cello. Oh, I love cello. But anyway, 8 years ago, I'm 67 now. Okay, so about 8 or 9 years ago, when I was 58, I started trumpet. No flute practice, no saxophone ever, no trumpet, no nothing. But I started trumpet. I just wanted to. And so now I've been playing for 8 or 9 years. And it's still really an uphill battle. But I do practice every day. I practice every day. Like, for instance, it's the first thing I do in the morning sometime between 7 and 11, I will get in. Any place between an hour and 45 minutes, if I'm fast, to 2.5 hours of practice. And I don't know if you ever play music, put you on a euphonium. So after I did that, I went on tour with a rock. After I got out of college, music composition, classical guitar, and voice, I toured for 6 nights a week doing copy songs. We would go to Cheyenne, Wyoming, to Colorado Springs, to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we'd stay there. And it was usually we would stay there for minimum 1 week. Sometimes we would stay there for a month. I'm talking 6 nights a week in the same room, at these big clubs and these big hotels. And we would play, you know, the popular hits of the day. And sometimes we were just a trio. I would be on lead guitar and singing, and the keyboard player was a keyboard player who could sing, and the drummer, great drummer who could sing. They were older than me, and they had played on cruise ships in their teens. And so, so at any rate, I did that. And then after I did that, I came back and I decided no more road work. I worked in schools and churches for a couple years and a half, doing just barely making any money. And then I got married, moved to Texas, set up my own recording studio in East Texas, which I thought was Dallas. No, it's not Dallas at all. Woo! I was in the hill. Let me have hills there. So Piney Woods, East Texas, Longview. So I was there and I started doing a lot of studio work in Longview with my own studio, because I had worked at a recording studio, so I knew something about, so I bought the cheapest equipment that I could that was good, and I had really spent the last 5 or 6 years in the studios in Hollywood, and so I started producing records in Longview, Texas, and that turned into commercials. And I was doing lots of commercials, and then I said, okay, got my level music sounding to the point where, oh, it sounds as good as anything on TV. And so when I got my music sounding good, then I called my California contacts, got back in, and started chasing the Los Angeles dream, which was for me to get on television and to do some more major work, not just as an engineer, although even at the time, of course, the engineering would have been fine, but oh my gosh. So iterate, so that's it. So I wound up doing a lot of television. You know, I did the theme song with Hanging with Mr. Cooper, 94, 95, 96. I worked on Family Matters with Steve Urkel. Not the first year, but I think the second year till I'm on there 60 or 70. I did over 300 episodes of primetime television as a full screen credit composer. And I've done several films after that. And I'm in the middle of a film now. It's so funny because I'm really most of the way through this film. And there's a fight between the director and the producers, which might scrub the whole film, or it's like, I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm not going to mention it at this point. But I'm going to, if the movie doesn't happen, or if my work does not get used, or some of the work from this one first group, well, then I'm going to take that and I'll release kind of as library music. So I've done some stuff for Discovery Channel in the last few years, which I never wanted to do any library music. But I guess the truth of the matter is so much is library music nowadays. So I'm getting confused. And over the last, 40 years or so, I have all these songs that I've written, never released, pretty much. And so I have all these songs that I'm working on right now. Just I feel like almost archivally, I like that word, I'm going to release them. And so that's also going on in my life. Of course, then I teach some, and I guess I'm going to gig this afternoon. So people will let you know what you're good at. And also people will sometimes insult you, even though you're good at something, because they're competitive or something. Or I don't know why. But use your disciplines. Yeah, I do yoga every day. I had 2 back surgeries. With all those TV shows work and all that stuff, I sat down. And I had deadlines, crazy deadlines for all those TV shows. And I had back trouble. And when I finally went to a neurologist, and I said, should I have the surgery? And he said, do you want to have the surgery? I said, what do you mean? And he says, well, it's your fault that you have back problems in the first place. How dare you? Except I couldn't stand up. So, and he says, you got to figure out, and he was being hard on me. I'm exaggerating a little bit. And so he said, you got to figure out why you're in this trouble, back pain, you know, pain. And I was in back pain trouble for many years. And finally, I did have it operated on. I needed, as he said, once you get that first operation, you're going to need the second operation because you're probably not. You know? And so I am fairly type A, you might notice. And so second round of coffee for the day. I did. And I went home, and about a year later, I did have to have the surgery. I had 2 spinal surgeries and a horrible spinal infection. But after that, I decided, you know what, whatever it takes. And you know what it takes for me? 1 hour of yoga every single day, Sometimes I have a 45-minute routine that I'll do.
What are some of your daily responsibilities? How does like a day look like for you? Because it's not exactly like following the structure of most like other jobs. Also, like, what's your favorite aspect and least favorite aspect of your work?
I guess the least favorite aspect for everybody is chasing your money after somebody owes you. But in terms of, like I say, I happen to practice trumpet every day. It's a slow payoff, but I'm really enjoying it, and it's certainly helping with hornets. That's a discipline for me. I don't usually practice guitar, but I did yesterday a little bit, and I've got that pretty much under control. But like, for instance, I'm still working on this movie, and I still have responsibilities. So over the last several months, and I think starting around Tuesday, the end of this week, I will be writing more music for this movie. This movie that's being done here. And so so that's one of my responsibilities. I do have several students. I have some voice students. I have some guitar students and stuff like that. Sometimes I go to their house, and sometimes they come to me, and sometimes we will do it through FaceTime. So that's just happens any kind of way. And I do enjoy the teaching. I don't always enjoy the driving, but I do enjoy the people teaching. And I go out and do some small gigs every once in a while. Like tonight, I'm going to go play for a couple hours at a local club here that I actually never played at. So I'm excited about playing there. And I'll just, you know, and I'll take a beatbox. So I will have some really nice modern beats. And plus I'll take a loop station pedal. So I'll do that. And plus I'll just play some straight guitar and voice. And so anyway, right, that'll be fun. And I play in two community bands. It's all music, isn't it? Two community bands. We're like people that are over 50. But like, so we played the other day at a retirement center, and that's really a lot of fun. And I'm interested in I'm also, you know, the one person who I'm hoping might be coming to my gig today is a young man who has a record company. He's a financial guy. He's in his 20s. He's in mid-20s. Marvin is his name. He's bilingual, and he really likes hip hop, and he has a great kind of big, deep voice, but real sweet and loving. And so he was one of my voice students, and he introduced me to some other people who are doing, of course, they're mainly all hip hop. My favorite songwriter, by the way, is Elliott Smith, and he passed, he died, but Elliott Smith had several songs in the movie Good Will Hunting.
So yeah, this concludes the interview. As I mentioned, this is only bits and pieces, parts of it were cut off by spotty Wi-Fi thunderstorms. So thank you to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your time with this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check out pathfinder101.com for more information like this. And yeah, thank you, and have a great rest of your day.